Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody
welcome to the Lifeboat Hour. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, June 8, 2014. As once again, we tackle the deeper challenges of living in turbulent times. Mike Rupert named this show so appropriately as the Lifeboat Hour because its intent has always been to provide options to help us navigate the very rough waters of the collapse of industrial civilization, abrupt climate change, and all of the madness that attend those. And once again, we have a really great show for you tonight. It's been an interesting week, and one of the highlights for me was Guy McPherson's debate with Leighton Steward at Northwest College in Wyoming, one of the very best presentations I've ever seen from Guy, and one of the worst exhibitions of climate denial that I've ever seen from his opponent, which should have surprised no one since Steward is an Enron insider. You can watch all of it at Guy's blog, Nature Bats Last. Now, next week, we're going to have a very special show for you on Father's Day, and I'm not going to give away the name of our guest, but he's someone I look forward to having with us to talk about, well, you'll just have to join us next Sunday night. No spoilers tonight, I'm sorry. As you all know, Mike Rupert was one of the world's most adamant peak oil activists, and his articles and interviews regarding peak oil are some of the best illuminations of the topic that we have. Along with Mike, Richard Heinberg, Colin Campbell, Matt Savinar, James Howard Kunstler, Matt Simmons, and many others unmasked the delusion that the planet has unlimited quantities of energy for humans to use and misuse in their quest for infinite growth on a finite planet. And tonight we have with us a fabulous guest whom I think you're going to really appreciate hearing from on the topic of energy depletion and climate change. My guest is energy activist and fellow Coloradan Nancy LaPlaca of Denver. Nancy is an energy policy expert with a focus on electricity generation. She served as policy advisor to an elected public utilities commissioner for 4 years, working to implement progressive policies in water use, the water energy nexus, energy efficiency, clean energy sources including solar electric, solar thermal, wind, geothermal, and combined heat and power. Her expertise in solar includes net energy metering and the benefits of solar over fossil-fueled generation, as well as expertise on shale gas, so-called clean coal, carbon sequestration, and regulatory barriers to clean energy. Nancy's joys in life are riding her bike, going to yoga, reading and singing her own songs, and mentoring others about the value of clean energy. Nancy, I'm really glad you have some joys in life, and welcome to the Lifeboat Hour.
Thank you so much, Carolyn.
It's really good to have you here, and I'd like you to start out by telling us how you got into the work that you're doing. What people or experiences influenced you?
Well, I've had a lifelong interest in environmental issues, and in 2006, I learned that there were a lot of new coal plants that were scheduled to be built in the country and understood enough about coal that it was a bad idea, and ended up meeting some activists in Boulder, including Leslie Glustrom, who's well known by most everyone in Colorado who works on these issues, and Xcel Energy in Colorado at the time was wanting to build a so-called clean coal plant somewhere in Colorado. So Leslie and I did research, intervened at the Public Utilities Commission, submitted a lot of data, and the interesting thing about clean coal and about a lot of these issues is that once you uncover the numbers, they speak for themselves, because a lot of these projects are so crazy and the cost is so high that if you have people, if you can get enough eyes on it and start, you know, using your common sense, you'll see that a lot of these projects are just crazy. So it was very empowering in that you could see that, you know, knowledge and working together with people and, you know, basically working for a more transparent democratic process, you know, did matter.
Good. And so your awakening was fairly early, it sounds like, in the midst of the last decade, right?
Well, you know, I've always had a love for environmental issues, and that's why I got a law degree early on, or not that early, but anyway, it's always been a big interest. And I think with climate change, everything just got more important and ramped up.
Right.
And once I really understood the role that coal played, it was really kind of maddening. And I think what's changed in the last, you know, 8 years or so is that the cost of clean energy has plummeted. And so there is no reason really why we can't start doing this in earnest. It used to be cost prohibitive, but it's really not anymore. And in this sense, the people are far ahead of the regulators and they're far ahead of the utilities.
Great. And you're an energy activist, and I'd like to hear from you why you believe energy activism is important.
Well, you know, I think when you do this kind of work, because it's pretty much tied up by the utilities, you kind of become an activist by definition, because what you're doing is pushing against the dominant paradigm, and the dominant paradigm is very, very strong. And pretty frustrating in a lot of ways, corrupt, very corrupt. And so if you're pushing for change in this, you become an activist. It was interesting to go work for a regulator and work in the regulated community, because that is a very, very staid, conservative atmosphere that's very different. And so it was interesting to have different views, and it was very helpful.
Well, I hope that later in the show, or if you want to do it now, it's okay, but at some point in the show, to talk to us more a bit more about the corruption factor. Were you going to address that later?
You know, yeah, we might as well jump in, Carolyn. You know, the term regulatory capture is pretty well known, and it applies to banks, it applies to, you know, lots of different things, and particularly in the Public Utilities Commission. And in fact, this is a subject that the people who designed the system, a guy who worked for Edison named Samuel Insull, they kind of designed it so that they could take control of it at the state level at each state. And so there, it tends to be very extremely insular. The topics are very arcane. They're difficult. It takes full time at least. And it keeps people out. So
right.
a process that's supposedly democratic, you know, in effect, very few people are actually participating in. And these people are making decisions about, you know, 30 years in the future for our energy supply. You know, whether we're going to be locked into coal, locked into nuclear, locked into natural gas for 30 years, or, you know, get more clean energy. So it tends to be, you know, I've seen poll after poll, Carolyn. 90% of people in Arizona want more solar, you know.
Right.
It's 80% literally in every single state in this country. And yet, if you look across the country, even sunny Arizona is less than 3.5% solar. Here in Colorado, we're less than 1%. So the utilities are trying to kill it early. In fact, Kansas, I understand there were 7 buildings that had solar, and they moved into the legislature to pass a bill so that they could stop it. So the utilities are very afraid of it, and they've had a gravy train, you know, $400 million worth of electricity sales in this country every year, $400 billion. So it's a nice, you know, $400 billion in sales, and the hotter it is, the more electricity you sell.
Right.
So it's a it's a difficult paradigm, and it obviously needs to change. You know, the idea that all this pollution can just get dumped on all of us with huge costs, but somehow they don't have to count those costs. I mean, that is just particularly insulting when you look at things like these huge coal ash spills and mercury and all the lakes and rivers in this country that we've contaminated with mercury. You know, it's uncountable, the damages.
Uncountable and unconscionable, right?
Yes, and unconscionable. And unconscionable. You know, there were a few times in my work where I would see what was going on in other countries, like India. India had a whole huge coal boom that actually they're pushing back on, because in India, solar is cheap because they don't have all those power lines. They can just go right in with distributed generation. But you would see that these other countries, Carolyn, like India, where people couldn't speak out, you know. And the more I learned about that, the more I realized those of us who are doing this have an obligation. Because in many parts of the world, when you speak out on these issues, you just, you know, there's no human rights. There's no. There's a story about how Freeport-McMoRan, which is one of the biggest corporations in Arizona, about how they infiltrated a citizens' movement in Indonesia, because there's no Bill of Rights. So you can
right.
go in and steal people's emails, and you know,
right.
there's no repercussions. You know, it's just
now.
So,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Anyway, you know, when you look into these things and you look into these damages and then you see all these people that are affected and that we have solutions, for heaven's sake. You know, the solutions are out there. And it really is just in the last, you know, 5 years that they've exploded. But we didn't invest in them. We wouldn't invest, you know, when... Who was it that took the panels off the White House? Was it Reagan?
Reagan, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, it's been downhill. I mean, the solar people have survived despite the United States. Back in the mid-90s, the United States was the third biggest market for solar in the world, the third biggest. Now we're like 8%. We bottomed out at like 5%. And our technology is what fueled the German market. And so, you know, we've thrown this away.
Well, let's talk about public utility commissions.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't even know what those are, and I'm wondering what it was like for you to work with the Public Utility Commission and why you think that public utility commissions are important.
Well, the Public Utilities Commission is a very interesting body. Every state has one, and it gets very complicated, but it can be boiled down to a couple simple principles. In the West, and we're a regulated state, which means that the utilities have a monopoly, and to a certain extent, they're guaranteed cost recovery if they can show that their actions were reasonable. And so they go before the Public Utilities Commission, and they say, this is how much money we spent on these kinds of plants, and we want to get paid back. And so the beauty for the utility is you spend a lot of money on these huge power plants, you know, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars, you know, and your guaranteed cost recovery. In exchange, there's supposed to be a high degree of scrutiny. You know, unfortunately, the utilities in every state lobby very heavily. They spend very heavily on elections. They influence the elections very heavily, too heavily. And the governor appoints the commissioners. And these issues still are pretty wonky and pretty small. And so there aren't a lot of people at the public utilities level. And it's the kind of thing where it's such a specialized area, Carolyn, that it tends to keep people out. You know, I have to believe at some point people are just going to jump in because they're going to want to do things. Like, for example, why isn't their solar on parking lots in the state of Arizona? It is so hot there.
Right.
Going to the grocery store, you have to bring an ice chest. You know, imagine putting solar panels outside. I've had guys who own grocery stores tell me they don't even care about the electricity. If they can give their customers covered parking, they'll get more business. They know that.
Right.
And yet the utilities won't let that happen because they won't let Well, there's many reasons they won't let that happen, but there's a lot of solutions out there that we're not implementing, that most people would be surprised we're not, because they're working in other states, they're working in other countries, and really we're just kind of shooting ourselves in the feet because we're burning all this carbon.
Right, exactly. Now, most people listening to this show understand that clean coal, so-called clean coal, will never work. And we also know that utilities around the U.S. are killing solar. And here in Colorado, we have a strange energy mix, which I'd like you to talk about. We have an energy company in Colorado called Xcel Energy, and they're working to actually reduce energy efficiency. Would you say more about that?
Yes, it's unfortunate that Colorado has gone from like 10th in the nation to 16th in energy efficiency. We're losing ground.
Mm-hmm.
And the state's largest utility, Xcel Energy, Public Service Company of Colorado, they've sent in it, they've put applications at the Public Utilities Commission to cut electric efficiency by 20% and natural gas efficiency by 30%. And the tragedy of that is that Xcel gets almost 60% of their energy from coal. The state as a whole is at 70%, 70, which is very high for such a sunny, windy state. And there's lots of programs we could do, put into place. We could displace natural gas with solar hot water. We could put into place all kinds of programs from LED lights for the cities, for street lights, to commercial buildings getting fitted out with solar hot water, to parking lots for shopping malls. There's all kinds of things. But instead, Xcel wants to cut the programs. And quite honestly, there's quite a few commentators and experts who say the reason is because the utilities have such high fixed costs that if they cut their income just a little bit, they cut their revenue hugely. In other words, if they cut their sales by only 2%, they can cut their profits by 20 or 30%. So the utilities are pushing against these programs, and the bottom line is we need to cut carbon. And
right.
Efficiency cuts carbon. Solar hot water cuts carbon. You know, I've heard anecdotally that Oregon has more solar hot water than Arizona. If that isn't an example of how political all this is, nothing is.
Right.
Sunny Arizona, 3% solar. I mean, this is just abominable.
That is insane. Now, I'd like you to comment on fracking in Colorado and the relationship of our governor with the energy industry. Currently, we have a moratorium on fracking in my county, Boulder County, but our county commissioners are not likely to stand up to the fracking energy much longer. And I think one of the most appalling things I've read about Governor Hickenlooper was his drinking fracking fluid on camera to, quote-unquote, prove it's safe.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate that that the fracking industry is so powerful here, and that Governor Hickenlooper wants to sue those communities that have banned fracking. I mean, communities should be able to do what's good for their community, and there's a lot of evidence that he should be willing to look at that shows that you've got very high decline rates, huge amounts of fugitive emissions, so that the overall life cycle a carbon effect is that natural gas is just as bad as coal. We could easily displace a lot of it with solar hot water and with other programs. We could displace natural gas use to renewable energy, to electricity from renewable energy. There's a lot better solutions out there, and unfortunately, it does tend to poison the political system. And we need political leaders who will stand up and give us a clean energy future, because when you look at Colorado and how we sit in the United States, we are blessed with abundant solar and wind, abundant.
Right.
Something like 6 to 10 times more wind than we'd ever need, and who knows how much more solar. And yet, as a whole, the state is still 70% coal.
And we're really losing the battle on fracking, aren't we?
Well, you know, I hate to say we're losing the battle, Carolyn, but I'd have to say that, you know, so far we are. But I think that the battle is going to change because a lot of these wells have such high decline rates.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost of gas is up again. It's up to $4. And so somehow I have to believe that in all the switching between coal and gas, people are going to get it, that energy efficiency, solar, wind, compressed air, you know, batteries. The problem is that the utilities govern the debate. The utilities and the state commissions govern the debate. And so we only have a few, you know, somewhat rogue states that literally are even addressing these critical issues. I mean, bringing them up in hearings. New
right.
York, California, Oregon, Washington, Vermont, Massachusetts. You know, there are Arkansas is doing a good job. There are some states doing a good job, but we could do a lot better.
Absolutely. You know, we're going to take a station break right here, and we'll be back in a couple minutes talking with Nancy LaPlaca, energy activist from Denver. Okay, we're back. This is the Lifeboat Hour. This is Carolyn Baker, and we're talking with Nancy LaPlaca, energy activist from Denver, Colorado. Remember that if you miss a show or you want your friends to listen to a show that they might have missed, all shows are archived within 24 hours of the live broadcast and can be found at prn.fm. Click on Shows and scroll down to the Lifeboat Hour. Now, before we return to our conversation with Nancy LaPlaca, Nancy, please tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you.
Listeners can get in touch with me at my email, which is my name, laplaca.nancy@gmail.com, or you can go find me on LinkedIn, is probably the easiest. Thanks, Carolyn. I also have a Twitter account, laplacanancy, that focuses on solar and solutions, carbon, etc.
And your last name is spelled LaPlaca.
Yes, thank you, Carolyn.
Okay, now in a few minutes we're going to start taking calls, as I suspect that some of our listeners have questions or comments for you. Just a heads up for callers, the number to call is 888-874-4888. But I'd like to continue with some questions for Nancy. So Nancy, you say, and I think most of us know, that some states are more energetically progressive. Can you tell us more specifically what they are doing?
Yes, and you know, this is important too, Carolyn, because it really shows you there are many problems for which we don't really have solutions, but this is one that does have a solution. And the states that are moving forward are California, New York, Massachusetts, Oregon, Washington, Vermont. And, you know, basically, for all the complexity of this issue, it comes down to a couple simple things. A lot of these power plants boil water. So we can either use the sun to boil water, nuclear, coal, natural gas. You know, it's pretty obvious to use the sun. The other big thing is access to capital. Is we need solar companies, energy efficiency companies, all kinds of different companies to have access to the market. And that's where we have a lot of innovation happening, too, and capital sort of bursting at the seams, ready to get out and ready to get access to those markets.
Now, I'd like to ask you a question. You mentioned California, and I'd like to ask you a question about the situation of California thinking that it had all of this shale to play with. And Richard Heinberg has recently written an article entitled, What Happened to My 13 Million Barrels of Oil? Can you talk about this disappearance of shale and the implications of that?
Yes, that's so crazy, Carolyn. You know, it's kind of one of those same old stories that people like Richard Heinberg have been writing about now going on decades, where they overstate the reserves, and a lot of times it's that they can prop up the stock deals or get more for land deals, and they, you know, the reserves are far, far overstated. And so if you don't have some kind of mechanism for accurate evaluation, measurement, and verification of a lot of these reserves, then, you know, a lot of this is pulled out of hot air. There are, you know, I think it was Matt Simmons, I first saw him do a presentation where he showed that, you know, in the year that they required the Middle East countries to start reporting their reserves, they just jumped all over the place. So it's kind of typical. And when you think about it, you know, these guys want to prop up their stock value. So it's in their financial interest to prop that up. And when you look at shale gas, the shale gas decline rates are very high, 65%. And so what that means is that a regular old conventional gas well that just drills straight down, it declines at a rate of about 30% per year, so that that well will last about 5 years. But with a shale well, the average decline rate is 65% the first year, so it's going to play out much sooner. And so there's a possibility that we're going to end up with all these stranded assets, infrastructure all over the place. You know, it's...
And we'll end up with a lot of wells that aren't being used anymore, just sitting there, right?
Yeah, just sitting there. In fact, I remember seeing some photos. Again, I think it was Matt Simmons. I think it was Azerbaijan, a huge abandoned field of those, you know, those wells, the gas wells that go up and down.
And the landscapes of a lot of states, including our own, are going to end up looking like that. You know, I want to throw something in here I was just thinking about a couple of minutes ago, and that is, you know, the big ya-ya that's going on all over the world about shale and the United States wanting to export. And, you know, there's a great deal of evidence that the current coup that was orchestrated by the United States in Ukraine is about that very thing, that, you know, the U.S. and other shale gas industries would like to go there and frack the hell out of that place and make them very dependent on our energy. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, you know, it's sad that everywhere we're not taking advantage of much cleaner technologies. You know, I think we're going to see in our country, we're going to see how this plays out, where Russia is the, you know, is where the spigot is, and everybody else is on the end of the spigot. And then if you're a country that happens to be between the spigot and the end of the pipe, you know, they're just going to come in and trample on you. It won't be pretty. And it seems like we're making these mistakes all over the world, you know, all over, using up water, not using our natural resources, fracking, you know. The damage to our groundwater is largely unknown. There are many unknowns.
Right.
So it's really sad, I think, Carolyn. It's interesting, and that's why I think it's important that more and more of us stand up. And that eventually it's going to be, did you ever see that hilarious viral video of the guy who's out there dancing by himself?
And then, no, I don't think I have.
Oh, well, it's this hilarious video, and it's about one guy's dancing, and then two people join him, and then pretty soon it's a huge party. Everybody's dancing.
Yeah.
So you just have to get out there and dance, you know, and then that's where people like you come in to help me keep dancing.
Yeah, and so let's go back to solar for a minute and talk about, if you would, the cost of solar compared with coal and other externalities.
Yeah, and this is important, too. Thanks for bringing this up. Because the cost of solar has plummeted in the last 5 years. It is cost-effective, according to the electric utility industry, in 16% of the total market in the United States right now, today. States with high electricity rates like California or higher, and Massachusetts and New York, and states where they have more policies that support clean energy. And I'm not going to say subsidized, unless we use the same term for coal, because the health effects from coal, COAL, coal-fired power, are 17 to 27 cents a kilowatt hour. So repeat that, 17 to 27. And the cost for a utility, an average utility, to generate one coal kilowatt hour is 3 cents.
Mm.
So basically, every, you know, kilowatt hour of coal-fired power, we're just inflicting upon ourselves, you know, three times at least as much damage.
So coal is actually, solar is actually cheaper than coal, it sounds like.
Well, it is when you look at the life cycle analysis, Carolyn. So if you use, then this is where, this is where the Public Utilities Commission is important, and where we need more voices there, is because the Public Utilities Commissions are the ones who approve the equation that says, here's how much we're going to pay you for coal, or here's how much we think this type of power is worth. And that's where we have these kind of crazy equations that don't count any of the benefits of solar, like no water use, no air pollution, no carbon, no fuel, no pipelines, no railroads, no coal ash, no nuclear waste. And on the other hand, it doesn't count the benefit of solar, which is feeds into the grid at peak power times, doesn't use any water. You know, we have a totally skewed playing field.
Right. I want to tell our callers again that we're going to take your calls. If you have questions or comments for Nancy, call us at 888-874-4888. And we're going to continue talking, but we'll stop for anybody who wants to call in. The next question I have for you, Nancy, is I'd like you to talk about fracking in terms of a couple of things. First of all, why it's a dead end rather than a bridge fuel, and also in relation to fracking, to talk about the water shortages in the West that are imminent. For example, the shrinking of Lake Mead.
Yeah, fracking, you know, the reason that natural gas is a dead end rather than a bridge, and lots of people are talking about this, is because it's just another fossil fuel. And the short-term climate effect of natural gas is as bad as coal, so we're getting no benefit.
Right.
In addition, we have so much excess natural gas capacity in this country, it's crazy. And I've seen many experts say that we have so much underutilized natural gas capacity in this country, because we have something like 440 megawatts of natural gas, no, gigawatts, I'm sorry, 440 gigawatts of natural gas, that we shouldn't have to build another plant. If utilities did common sense things like shared power regionally, you know, so that we could cut back on the backup, if we, you know, the more geographic dispersity you have with clean energy, the more you can use. Because if it's not sunny here, then it's sunny over there, and if it's not windy here, it's windy over there.
Right.
So, you know, there are all these... We should be going right now to clean energy and using as little of our natural gas as we can, as we possibly can, so we could save it for the future, reduce emissions. And then to move on to Lake Mead, I mean, I think it's interesting that I think this is the breakout year, 2014, 2015. There's going to be many things happening with water around the whole world.
Right.
And Lake Mead is something that many people have been watching for many years. And the day has arrived when the lake levels are so low that they literally are going down 20 feet a year. And the reason this is so critical for states like Arizona is because half of its water supply, 72% for Tucson and 45% for Phoenix, comes from Lake Mead, from the Colorado River.
And what about states like Nevada and California?
Well, Nevada gets... A fair amount of its water from Lake Mead, too. Las Vegas, I believe, gets 90%, and so they're in the process right now of spending $1 billion to build a tunnel so that they can get water out of Lake Mead, because the lake level is getting so low that the level is getting below the intake, the water intake. And then as the lake level drops, Carolyn, first milestone will be losing the first intake for Las Vegas. The next milestone will be, well, another intake for Las Vegas. The next milestone will be losing power from the dam. And then the next milestone will be the lake will be so low there will be no water flowing to either the Imperial Valley in San Diego and Arizona. So honestly, it's kind of a headbanger. And more people are talking about this because
it's really serious. I know that Las Vegas has taken a lot of the water supply from northern Nevada. And, you know, there's been a whole big conflict about that. And most of the water now is really going down to Las Vegas. And, of course, we know how Las Vegas uses water.
You know, there's actually, if I remember this right, Carolyn, There was a plan to get the water out of northern Nevada and bring it to southern Nevada, which is where Las Vegas is. But I'll tell you, I don't think those plans are going to happen.
Uh-huh.
I think we're in a different era. And all the era of all these big dams.
Yeah, say more about that. I want to hear.
Well, because I think we're going to realize just how foolish it is. And that basically, what are we doing? Spending billions of dollars to move commodity around. Whether
right.
the commodity is natural gas, coal and a slurry, you know, whatever the commodity is. You spoke earlier about LNG and exporting gas. Same reason. When you have this commodity and then you have to compress it and regasify it and move it around and put it in pipelines and compress it and it explodes and, you know, we're looking at a clean energy future where we have none of those problems. And yet we allow our state regulatory agencies to not count all those benefits.
Now, I know there are a lot of people listening who are really, really aware of catastrophic climate change and aware of a lot of these issues, and I'd like you to call in and ask your questions to Nancy or make some comments. I'd like to continue talking a little bit about water, if we could, because this is, as you said, such a huge issue around the world, mm-hmm. and, you know, we're probably by the end of 2015 going to see an ice-free Arctic.
Yeah.
And so water is such an enormous issue around the world, and that's another thing that really makes me nuts personally about fracking is the immense waste of water.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'll never forget my surprise when I realized that power generation actually withdraws as much water. As crops.
Wow.
And so we withdraw huge amounts of water in this country. Surface water, groundwater, water from streams, water from the oceans, huge amounts of water to cool power plants. And then with fracking, what plenty of scientists are saying is that when you mix that fracking water, when you shoot large amounts of water in the ground, nobody really knows what the long-term effects are, and you're basically contaminating a lot of water. And so as all this produced water, they call it, from the fracking site, where they mix the fracking, the water with the chemicals and the sand, and they shoot it in at high speed, if that, what they call produced water, when that ends up at the wastewater treatment plant, it's creating a lot of problems because these wastewater treatment plants were not designed to handle these huge amounts of toxins.
Right.
And so we are setting up future battles between farmers and frackers, which is, you know, crazy. And so we need to start counting the water use of power, Carolyn, because we literally do not do that in this country. And what's interesting is we're starting to see an era where nuclear power plants in the Southeast are closing down because it's so hot that they can't dump the cooling water from a nuclear power plant, which is extremely hot, into the stream or river because it's so hot that there are regulations that prevent that water from being dumped. And if a nuclear power plant can't dump its water, it has to shut down.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, we have a caller, Gabe from Indiana. You have a question regarding corruption. Go ahead, Gabe.
Hi, Carolyn and Nancy. Gabe Rivera from EndTheDrugWarToday.com. I appreciate you guys taking the time to take calls and discussing the energy problem, especially how corruption functions within politics and the media in regards to such.
Yeah.
Do you have a question or comment, Gabe?
Well, it's the corruption. You know, I have this theory that Michael Rupert may have committed suicide because he was involved in processes such as interviewing Patrick Henry, Abby Martin. These people are on RT, which is Russia Today, which is Putin, which is going around shooting activists in the Ukraine. Now, this is all
Mike Rupert was not assassinated. I'd like to continue with Nancy's comments. Go ahead, Nancy. Thank you very much for your interest, and we're going to move on. Nancy, please tell us about solar hot water, which is an ignored technology that could reduce our natural gas use.
Yeah, it's just so remarkably simple, Carolyn. I've read and heard from friends who've been to China that on most roofs in China, people have a barrel, just a simple 55-gallon barrel, that holds hot water with literally a drain coming down.
Right.
And our potential to heat hot water is unbelievable. And when you think about how inefficient it is to burn coal hundreds of miles away, and then all the loss through the power lines, the mining, et cetera, so that the net energy reaching your outlet, according to experts like Amory Lovins, is literally 3%. We're using that coal-fired power to come out here and use electricity to heat our water instead of using the sun. It is just crazy. And so also because we have utility-scale concentrating solar power where you use media like oil, you heat up oil, and the oil heats up molten salt, and the salt heats up water to make steam, to turn a steam turbine, to produce electricity. And there's all these incredible solutions out there that really, quite honestly, our energy use is declining, and a lot of these dirty old coal plants, the operators need to realize they are not serving our society by keeping those coal plants running, and it's time for us to move to a clean energy future.
Well, you see, this brings up what I think most of our listeners understand, and I know that you understand, and that is that, you know, we're probably not going to make these changes. And I know that you're really working hard for solar, and I totally, totally applaud you, and I know that you're doing great things, and I'm also very concerned that, you know, because of the corruption that you talked about earlier, and I'm sure you could talk about for hours, we're not willing to make these changes that will truly make any kind of impact on catastrophic climate change. Because it would mean sacrificing some of their profits. It would mean inconvenience for some people. It would mean scaling back on our lifestyles in many situations. It would mean really rethinking infinite growth on a finite planet, right?
Yes. I mean, I think what most energy professionals realize, though, that most people don't, is that we can live very high quality lives with much less energy. So just if you look at a lifestyle like we have today, Europe uses half as much energy, Japan also the same. And I think that, yes, you know, anyone who thinks that there's infinite growth on a finite planet is either a madman or an economist, according
right.
to Kenneth Boulding from Boulder. I think you're
right,
totally right.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, what I see that's hopeful, Carolyn, and I try to focus on that, is that we can make things better in little pockets. And if you look at what happened in Germany, which really was brought about by one person, Dr. Hermann Scheer, his vision was the Energiewende. And if you look at Germany, it's not very sunny and it's not very windy. And really, that's where the clean energy revolution started. And yes, it's not going to, you know, what will it do to climate change? Not enough, you know. We needed to start 10 years ago, of course. But I do see and I do believe that when we make our communities more resilient, every family that goes to solar, every church, every community center, every incremental megawatt is something that improves someone's quality of life. And
right.
that is a driving force.
Yeah, and you know, I'd like to hear your thoughts on my hometown here of Boulder and
mm-hmm.
its own cutting off from Xcel and starting its own energy power company, Boulder Power and Light. It's in the process of doing it. It's not there yet. So is that an example of what you're talking about?
Oh, yeah. It's an incredible innovation, Carolyn. And what's really, when you look at the numbers out of Boulder, you understand why Xcel is fighting this so hard.
Well, say more about that, if you would, please.
Yeah, Xcel was making about $35 million a year in profit in Boulder alone. So for Boulder to go from its current about 12% clean energy to literally 50% clean energy with no net increase in cost, and here's why. Because wind is cheap in Colorado, because energy efficiency is cheap, and so you can offset the higher cost of solar with the lower cost of energy efficiency. And because you offset fuel costs permanently with clean energy, and because as a municipality you get a lower cost of capital, you combine all those things, you know, less profit that you need to make, lower cost of capital, cheap wind, and basically you end up with what, you know, is pretty much a no-brainer, that the city of Boulder will be able to get to 50% clean energy much, much sooner. And really the bottom line is that you have a lot of utilities with coal assets, and they want to maximize their profits from these coal assets.
Right. So I'm going to say it one more time, put out one more invitation. If you have a comment or question for Nancy or for me, call us at 888-874-4888. And I would like to talk about earthquakes and mudslides for a minute, because mm-hmm. we're not just talking about Colorado. We're talking about fracking wherever it is being done. So we had a huge, huge mudslide over in the western slope, the western side of Colorado recently. We had an earthquake 3.7 in Greeley, I believe, last week or the week before. We rarely get earthquakes in Colorado, and that's even a little high, 3.7, for anything that we get around here. What do you think about that?
You know, Carol, it's interesting you bring that up, because when I first started my work on so-called clean coal, carbon sequestration was part of it. And actually, someone that I know had done a study in the 70s on the effect on whether or not earthquakes caused in the late 60s and early 70s by drilling underneath the Denver Basin to inject liquid waste from Rocky Mountain Arsenal was causing earthquakes.
Uh-huh.
And the answer was yes. Mm-hmm. And basically what I learned in looking at all that was that, yeah, when you drill, you are inducing seismic activity. You can induce sliding of rocks together. You can, you know, let out gas. And so here we are. I think we're up to 53,000 wells drilled in the state of Colorado. I was talking
right.
to a friend the other day. Is that what it is, Carol? 53,000 wells.
I believe so, yeah.
And I remember when I was doing filings, it was 36,000. And that was around 2009, 2010, I filed my last stuff on that. And so, you know, it's growing by leaps and bounds. And so, unfortunately, we're not looking at the long-term effects of all this. You know, it's alarming. It's alarming.
Well, you know, do you have any information on the slide over on the western slope? Because we have had lots of reporting about that slide, and, you know, including funeral services and everything on local TV, but no mention, not one bit of mention in mainstream media about the possibility of this being related to fracking.
You know, there are some really good watchdog groups over on the western slope, Carolyn. The Oil and Gas Accountability Project. And I would expect that people are watching that, because frankly, I know when I read news accounts of it, no one mentioned fracking. It took quite a while to run into a news clip that mentioned how much fracking was going on up there.
Right.
But I would hope and I would expect that those kinds of tests are going to continue. You know, it's critical that we test. It's just critical.
Absolutely.
We have
another caller. Sorry to interrupt you, Nancy. We have Larry, who's calling from Pittsburgh. I think that might be major fracking country, about how to change politicians who are being bought by the energy and solar companies. Larry, go ahead.
Yes, good evening. Yes, major fracking here. It's, you know, unending, and just people are just goose-stepping to the whole industry for whatever they want to do. They just approved the fact that we're going to put in our underneath our county parks here in Allegheny County. They're going to start fracking underneath them. Of course, they're not going to frack on them. You know, they're not going to drill on them. They're going to go sideways and, you know, come in sideways and do it. But, Yeah, this is a major area. But I have a comment and a question. My comment was, years ago, I remember seeing like a Popular Science or Popular Mechanics, and there was a father kneeling down on the grass and his wife, it looked like Joan Cleaver beside him, you know, holding his shoulder. It was a little boy, little girl, and there was a little solar panel on the front of the cover, and it said, in the future, this is how we're going to be heating our homes. And this was like a 1954 issue, and I have looked everywhere online. I can't find it. I can never pull up that issue. I almost think that they just deleted it. But my question is, you had mentioned earlier about how we need to, you know, get after our politicians and change our politicians, but since they're all being bought by the corporations and the energy companies and just every other special interest group, I mean, is it even possibly conceivable to change that level of power?
You know, here's why I'd say it is, at least for trying to get solar in different state at the state level, because I've watched it happen. In Arizona, 1,000 people showed up at the commission. They were so outraged that the commission was going to possibly add on a $50 a month charge for solar. 50 to 100 per month. 1,000 people showed up. In Colorado, 30,000 signatures and a few hundred people showed up at the commission. North Carolina, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people are showing up for Moral Mondays and writing to the Public Utilities Commission and starting their own solar groups. So I would say that, you know, in many areas, it's pretty rough. I agree, it's tough. But when you show up for solar, that's why the utilities want to kill it now. It's whoever puts up solar in their house almost automatically becomes a solar advocate. Really, it is kind of magical stuff. And
And I'm in the process. I'm putting an inverter in there. It's already in, and I'm going to get solar panels on top, and I'm going to do my utmost to just get as much power from the sun as I possibly can in there, and hopefully someday I'm going to live in there.
Good for you, Larry. Thank you for your call.
And thank you all for your work.
And Nancy, I want to ask you one more question, and that is what you call the human side of all this. Can you talk about that for a bit?
Yeah, the human side of all this is that, you know, the information is difficult, and it's complicated, and the foes are huge and overwhelming. And, you know, it was an interesting experience to go up against such a big, huge thing, clean coal, and then realize just how ridiculous it was. Because really, frankly, it's ridiculous. The whole idea that, you know, that you're going to clean coal up and then you're going to take the carbon and compress it and stick it under the ground and let it stay there and monitor it and it won't leak out. And, you know, you start seeing these ridiculous things that are actually moving forward and you say, someone has to do something. You know, and so the human side, reading your book, running into your early book, was it your first book, Carolyn, Sacred Demise?
Yeah, my first book, Sacred Demise, Walking the Spiritual Path of Industrial Civilization's Collapse.
Yes, I still give that book out. In fact, I just talked to Marilyn yesterday, Marilyn Magenity at the Mercury Cafe, about you.
Uh-huh.
She wrote that book down. But it's been very helpful to be able to talk to you, to read your books and understand that, you know, it's not just some silly issue. It's all caught up with power and money and struggle and our future and our children's future and how we live and, you know, very important issues. Will the survivability of the planet, the habitability of the Earth. And so it has its heaviness. And so it's really wonderful to have a place and writers and thinkers who are thinking about the spiritual side of all this.
Well, that's one reason that we have this show, you know. It truly is a form of a lifeboat. And, you know, we're striving to have as many really good guests on here like you as we have tonight. And I just really appreciate all of the light that you're shedding on this, because wow, you know, I thought I knew about energy. I thought I knew about fracking. I thought I knew about solar. And I've learned a whole bunch tonight that has really been invaluable. And I'm very pleased to know that my own community is doing so much in the right direction.
Oh, Carolyn, honestly, Boulder, it really is leading the way. Because even if, you know, they'll keep on. And when you see the communities, like communities in Denmark, Randy Udall used to tell this story about how he'd visit these places in Denmark where people were teaching their kids how to run like the local biodigester. And, you know, you see that it's such a wonderful solution. Run your own municipal electric system, you know.
Well, as I have said, I don't know if there are solutions, but if there are solutions, they're local. And if it's not local, it's not a solution, right?
Yes, it's, you know, that's an interesting debate with electricity, Carolyn. But let's go local. And there's so little local.
Right.
So much of our power is big, huge power plants far away. Let's bring it home.
Yeah, I totally agree. Next week, we're going to have a very special show for you. It's Father's Day, and I really want to thank Nancy for coming on tonight. Again, you can contact her at LaPlaca, that's LAPLACA dot Nancy at gmail.com. I want to thank you so much, Nancy, for coming on, and thank you all of you listeners and everyone who called in. And we'll be back with you again next week.
Carolyn's my pleasure. Thank you so much for all your work.
Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows.